Accession number 30342, reel 2.
Anyway, we talked about one term. My mother started to cry her eyes out like that, and my dad was saying, don't be silly, don't volunteer and all that. So, okay, I didn't bother to start hanging out with Hodge, my best man. He was, you can see the fellow brick there. And that was about it, really.
Yeah, now you said you were thinking of volunteering. What were you going to volunteer for?
The engineers.
That would have been the army.
Because, yeah, road engineers, because my brother was in the road engineers. He got called up, see.
And when did he get called up?
He must have got called up early 40s, I suppose. Yeah, just after.
So he'd have been coming back on leave.
Yeah.
And so what was his stories to you about the army and what you might expect? What did he think of it?
Well, I thought it was great to hear him talking like that, you know.
So he was positive about
it? They've all had a few problems with all that. It's good to pub and things like that, you know.
So he was quite happy with the army?
He was for a while, you know. But the revolution was a piece of cake compared to one he was in anyway, because he worked in a forestry company, going around felling trees and things like that, different things like that. And of course they got involved in the bomb, picked up bombs and they got a part of the origin, disposal of the bombs and that, you know. That's when it got a bit shady. Because he says one time they were working, I took the hats off and put them down, and people were putting money in the hats and things like that, you know. Because we had not put down it for that purpose, just so won't be working down.
Now, you were basically still working as a bricklayer. You were working on the shelters and so on.
Yeah.
Did you pay any attention to like the war news as it was coming through from like 39 to 40? Things like Dunkirk. I mean, I think.
Well, there's a couple of friends of mine. They come back from Dunkirk, and one of them had a sort of stress the other wee bit. So, whatever he said, that he didn't take this gospel. Fella called Bill Hunter.
But, and what did they say? What were they kind of opinions of what had happened?
Oh well, yeah, they thought it was dreadful to think like that, you know, yeah. Because everybody was singing the praises of the people that was going to pick these lads from Dunkirk and things like that.
What was morale like at that time in Shields? You and your friends, you know, you were going to work, you were coming back, you were, you know, talking to each other. What did you think about the war and what was going on? This is in 1940. After the Dunkirk period.
Well, I used to go to the dance halls and you're meeting guys that was coming home and leaving, they get and have a chat with them, that have a few beers they get in the local pubs. And we'll tell a different stories they got. And we got that way when we just waited until the time come.
And
because I felt we were doing a good job building the air shelters, which we were. And I remember one time at the seafront of South Shields there. It was really very, very cold indeed. And part of the roof had been damaged. So I went down there to repair the roof and I had a fella with me. And it was so bad, he had the tile rope around my waist, roll me down, and he said, get the other side of the ridge tile. Well, I repaired the roof. And as I repaired the roof, I said to this lad, I says, take me while you get a can, put to make your tea in. Sort of an only tin can. Asked the lady to put some hot water on this tea, and she wouldn't. And me, in all the highly dangerous job, I had to say, for a busy coach, refused to make a cup of tea. I just packed my toes and went back and started elsewhere. I wouldn't do a job for her.
Now, you were obviously knew that you were going to be caught. Going to be called at
stage.
Now, was there anybody, I mean, you had your brother that was already in the army. Had your dad had any experience of the war from the First World War?
No, he was working in the shipyard after the First World War.
So was there anybody else in the family besides
my
you?
Family.
There was nobody that could, like, stay in the right, you know, say do this
no,
or do that?
No, I could call, no.
Yeah. And did your brother give you any advice before?
Well, my dad would say, whatever you do, don't get any tattoos, because if you get into trouble at all, it would all sort of... You know, with that guy, that's the one, he's got a tattoo, that's the right, that's the fella. He told me not to get any tattoos. You know.
Now, you're working on the air raid shows and so on. What was the money like as a bricklayer? Did that job get better?
No. You had a basic rate.
And what was the basic rate?
I think the full bridge packet for the 4 week was about £3.17 or something.
And would that go very far? Would that allow you to have a social life where you're always counting the pennies?
Well, I never finished my trade, you see, because when I finished my trade, I got called up. So when I was 21, I got called up about a week after that. So I was an apprentice until I went to the Army Warders.
What do you remember about the day that the letter arrived, or can you remember how?
Well, what happened, this friend of mine, get back to Hodge again, I was getting by his home, living in Miller's house, having to wash his shave, and look out the window there, and I hear this motorbike chug up, and I looked at this Hodge getting off this motorbike. So he come to me, and he said, I've just bought this motorbike, he said, it's complete. He says, I paid £7 for it. So he said, I'll tell you what, he says, we'll wheel back to my dad, because I told his dad was a champion. He had an old stable where he used to keep all the soot and things like that. So what he did, we went back to the stable and he got the motorbike and took the pieces and laid all the pieces on the floor there. So right, tomorrow morning, we'll fix it again. We're going to have a couple of pints now. When I had a couple of pints, when I got last next morning, we got all called up papers. And that motorbike stayed on that floor all during the war till we come back and they put it together again. It sold for £11. So we never did write it.
Now, what did the envelope say? You got this envelope.
Oh, yeah. Because I had asked me what to be in. And I says, Royal Engineers. Oh, you're a brick. Oh, well, you should get the Royal Engineers. He says, anybody? I said, my brother was a Royal Engineer. So what about your dad? So I told him Fibby, I said, oh, I said, the last war, he was a Royal Engineer too. I said, oh, good, since you're going to Royal Engineer. Well, he got me called up here, I said, I'm putting infantry.
Now,
so my mother says, I thought I'd go to Engineer. I says, oh, no, I said, I want to go to infantry. Can't you give me a few more tears than that?
Now, you mentioned there that you'd met the authorities before, you know, and told them you wanted to be, you know. So what was that pre-selection process? Can you remember anything about that when you were the initial, you know, the medical and all the rest of it?
Oh,
that was obviously before you were.
Well, got enlisted, you mean?
Yeah, before the actual enlistment, there was like a
pre. How do you go for the civil fit you were that? I mean, before you.
Yeah, that. Can you talk a little bit about that? What that entailed?
Well, I think as long as you were breathing more or less. I put on pretty good shape, and they passed me A1, and I don't think I had much wrong with me at all, really, in that way. But I had to put it through a pretty severe sort of physical, and get all these inoculations and all that, you know.
So you got your calling up papers. What did they say? Where did you have to go? What did you have to do?
It was only about 3 weeks, I think, before it was gone.
So it was a date that you had to report?
Yeah.
And what did it say? Where did you have to report to?
Just report to Durham, I think it was. But my mother says to me, go and get your hair cut before you go in. So I went to the barber's, paid the 4 pence then. And I says, I'm going to the army on Friday, or whatever day it was. Give me a close smoke hair. She says, okay, so he gave me a nice short haircut. Great. So I went there. As soon as I got there, I said, you went to get your haircut. I mean, I'm going to have another haircut. And it was just about, all very, very closely cropped. And that was at Bransworth. And like I said, it was very, very cold indeed. And it was all inoculations and all that.
So you were posted to Bransworth camp?
Bransworth camp.
Yeah. Now, did it actually.
Just outside of Durham Lake.
Did it say Durham Light Infantry on the. Did you know you were going?
Oh, I knew I was going to enter the eye. Yeah.
So what did you know? What did you know about the DLI, and what did you know about the infantry? Was there anybody?
Nothing at all. I knew you had to do a lot of marches, but I was a good walker, I had a good strong pair of legs, so the walking wouldn't worry me at all.
Were there any other lads from that you knew from Shales that were called up with you that went to Bransworth with you?
Well, Joe Jennings was. He's a fellow bricklayer, and he went to school with me, and he joined the same platoon as me when he went to Bransworth. And I remember they had a boxing tournament there. And this corporal, he had a blonde girlfriend. She was a pretty attractive girlfriend. But She used to have the photographs out, and every other guy had a picture of her, and she wasn't anybody to meet, sort of things. Come on, girl. And anyway, his father used to go around this corporal, and he was a good boxer, and he used to knock the fellas about and all that sort of thing. And he come to George Jennings, and he picked up. Well, George Jennings was like me, I was left-hander, but George Jennings at that time was a big, strong lad, very big, strong lad. And he sort of go on sorting out Joe, and George just saw my left hand, being left-handed. And he knocked his corporal flying, and his corporal says, well, that's the way I want you to do. He says, you just do what this fella says here now, he says that, you know. But he didn't, because he got knocked about in front of his girlfriend too, which didn't go down very well.
Can you remember who the corporal was?
Oh no, in the evening, you know.
But he was one of the training.
Oh, he was one of the fellas, the instructors.
Yeah. Can you just take us through whatever you can remember about? You had to go to Brandsbeth. You were still living at home with your mother. Yeah. What did you have to take with you? What did they tell you? What did you have to? You know, you were going to Durham. What did you have to take with you? And what happened when you got there? You know, the very first day, your first introduction to the army.
Well, you had to take some shaving kit, I think. But no, you got your shaving kit in studio. So basically, all I had was a clothes, I was standing up, and I think, and that, you know.
So you got to Brandsbeth, what happened?
Well, as soon as you get there, they're going to issue a uniform. And the same goes in the army. There's only two sizes in the army, two small and two big. And of course, they'll look at you, and they'll sew your hat, and they'll sew your jacket. They've got shoes to take, size 10 or whatever. Overcoat there, and you used to wear those long drawers thing. We used to call them John L's, long cogs and all that, you know.
John what?
John L. Sullivan used to wear the boxer.
Oh,
the long drawers.
Oh, they were like underwear thing.
Yeah, right there. Yeah, used to wear them.
John L.
We called them John L's because John L. Sullivan was the boxer, he used to wear them. That's what everybody called them, John L's. And they got gas cape. And you got this off by hand, knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb and lather brush. You got that up. And you got vest tins and things like that. And your cap badge and button stick. You had to buy your own brass one thing like that and your blanco. And your shoe polish and that. That's about all, I think, for what you had to get.
And that was all done at Brandsbeth?
At Brandsbeth.
Yeah.
And of course, what they used to do, you used to put your jacket on, they'd come on with a bit of chalk, put a mark here a bit there, got take a bit off there, you know, slacken it up here and all that. And you're sort of a bit too long and all that, you know, they knock a bit at the bottom.
So they would make adjustments to make the uniform fit a little bit better?
Well, this, because when they fit you, you get a, my clothes were all the big blokes, sort of thing, compared to the rest of the kids at the time. And even some of the stuff was far too big for me. So they used to make it fit you, you know. And of course, they fit you in places, like not like the Americans on the TV, you know, with all smartly dressed, like, you know, with the uniforms all that neatly pressed. We just used to take a load of bags of rubbish, sort of thing. Anyway, we got the justice and all that, you know. And that was good over that period, really. But the indoctrination was pretty tough.
And that kid, but on this very first day and first night, what was the accommodation? Where did they put you at Brandsbeth?
Well, you went in a barrack room. And I think there's 30 blokes in the bathroom. It was sleeping on the floor.
And on the floor? There's no beds?
Well, you had donkey's breakfast, I think they called it. You got like a big Hessian sack. You had to go around and fill it up with straw. And of course, the fellas had been in a while, they knew the ropes. When you first go in, you didn't realise, and you put a certain amount of salt, oh, that's just right. But of course, after you've been there for a couple of days, it's all sort of diminished, so you're putting it out on the floor. So you had to pack the Hessian sack up, so a good big round thing, and you gradually get it out to your base size and all that, you know. You had three blankets, I think. You had, what was that, a pillow? Yeah, I can't remember, yeah, what was that, a pillow? But no pyjamas, no sheets, or nothing like that. No, nothing like that.
What do you remember about your training squad, the men that you were with? You mentioned George Jennings. Is there any other names from this period that stick in your mind?
Well, there's one lad there called Arthur Paler. And he's mentioned that...
On the Roll of Honour?
Yeah. he got killed with opening box of explosives or something like that. And there was another lad called McCourt, and he got killed when we were in Bransmith on some exercise. They used to throw these bombs at you, but they were just flash bombs to make them, you know, to scare you, put you on the ball. Well, you would stand by a tree, and the bomb hit there, and come back with his head like that, and killed him. He had been there for a couple of months.
And that was during your basic training?
Basic training, yeah. Just a matter of a couple of weeks or so, you got killed there and then. A court, you know, and he's nice bloke too.
And where was he from?
In Durham somewhere. He's a Georgie lad.
Yeah. So there was around about 30 of you in this hut.
Yeah, 34.
Where were they from? Did they study?
Well, some from Hartlepool, some from Middlesbrough. Your dad could have been there. Mm. I wouldn't have known you at the beginning, yeah. But it could.
So they're all North Easterners, though. They were all.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't was nobody at all from Birmingham or London.
Oh
or,
no,
none at all. All Georgian.
He got transferred to Italy. That's when they started.
That's when that happened. So at this stage, everybody you were with was more or less a local, somebody else.
Right.
Yeah. Any other characters in the can you pick with it like?
Yeah, Mackay was a bit of a character, and him and I got quite well actually. And got him jumping quite a bit, but before I got no better in the battalion. Yeah. But we used to go to a place, Willington, and there were so many pubs there. I think it was 11 pubs on the one street or something like that. And we used to go there and get a few beers, but you had to get back before midnight or something like that. So when you got on the bus to get back, with it being during the war, it was all in the darkness, the lights were very, very dim, things like that, you know. This little MP bloke, the policeman, you know, he's a little guy.
Military policeman.
Military policeman. And he wasn't very popular at all. He's a shop all the time and all that all the time, you know. And they're getting put on jackets or CP or whatever it is. And there was one particular time, he was on the bus coming back. And the bus had got tipped off. Because he wouldn't dare do anything against him at all because of an MP. When he stepped out the dimly lit bus into the pitch dark, somebody reached forward, put him down, kicked him right in the face and down his foot. He's a good guy after that. Didn't misbehave himself at all after that. That's good. That's one story.
Now, you mentioned beer quite a few times. You had the money to get a drink.
Oh no, you only spent what you had. You didn't get any more money. But we got 40 more people in the joint. $7 your mum, $7 for yourself, and of course you had to buy food and nappy and things like that. So you could only sort of, you know, get the odd beer done again. But beer was only 6 pence a pint, you see. I mean, I'm talking about that. You get 40 pence for a pound. Here in my town, here's Beehive now, pays 2.50. So that's 80, it's 100 pence for what I paid for one. You know, for 6 pence a pint, it's £2.50 now. Yeah.
Now, so you were at Bransmith, you're in the army, you've been issued with your uniform. What was the training routine when those very first few days, those first few weeks of being at Bransmith? What can you take us through a typical day?
Well, the weather was really rough and all that, and you go on guard and you had to get what you call, you had to get yourself blankled up, brassled up, and the smartest boy on the parade is to get what they called the stick, which meant that he didn't have to do the guard. Well, there's a fella called Stanley, that was his surname, Stanley, and he, for some, you had managed to get two lots of equipment, and he always had one sparkling new. And we used to have to go out and do an exercise when they come back, or sort of really untidy, to try and do it up, but Stanley always got the stick. So what they did one time, when he was out, we had kippers for dinner. So they brought the kippers back in the barrack room, opened these pouches and all that, and put these kippers inside the pouches. And were there, and of course, when the corporal come on, what the hell's that smell now, that, you know? And they found out it was his because his whole equipment stunk. He didn't get, it was hell on about that, he didn't get a stick at all that day. And I managed to get sick one time, and I went to Plasper's Castle, and on guard day, walking down all that, you know. That was quite an experience, you know, but I'd only got it once.
Did you ever get inside the castle?
Well, only if I popped in there for a while, I didn't see much about it at all, you know.
So what was actually in the castle?
That I really don't know.
Your experience at Bransworth was the main camp.
That's right.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. And you do exercises run by whatever it was around there. Spenny War.
So what was a typical day at this period? What time would you get up? What would you do? How would the day progress?
You get up about 6:30 and wash and shave and all that things like that. And of course, when you got there was all milling down the ablutions, they call them. There was hardly ever any hot water, you know, and you had to get a wash and shave and get back quicker than that. Might have to put your PT cut and go for a run and all that. And you get your breakfast. Breakfast was pretty good. Wasn't too bad at all.
What would that be?
But bacon and beans or something like that, and fried bread, probably porridge.
Well, people were happy with the breakfast.
Well, yeah, because you see, you're in the winter, and you're young, and you're getting plenty of fresh air and exercise, so you're always ravenously hungry. You know, you could eat like.
So, yeah.
You see, you've got two plates, and when you're walking around, you had allowed to have a slice of bread, or maybe two slices. So when you're walking around, you'd look around like this, and get a couple of slices of bread, put them underneath the plate. And so you've got two slices under the plate, and hold the bread up there, and you go around and get your dinner. And things like that, you know. And you sit on your deck, and for a couple of slices of bread.
So, breakfast, possibly PT, then what would the rest of the training routine be in the day?
Well, you'd have to learn how to shoot your rifle and how to march up and down and training and things like that. And go for a long march and book it down rain, and you come back and you'd have to just lie in the field there. If you would take your gas cap or put your gas cap down, you'd lie in there, try and get to sleep, book it down rain. You're there for about 2 or 3 hours, you wake up. Don't get yourself thrown out and all that. Put your gear back on again and march back to camp.
Now you were put on these route marches. How fit were you and your colleagues? Fit, and, you know, in terms of like, could you cope with? How did they start you off, and how did they get start off as short and get longer?
You didn't get thrown a deep end completely, but by the end of your training, like, you had really sort of roughed it.
So what kind of route marches would you be doing at the end?
15 miles was good.
What about the light infantry pace? How did you cope with that? The quick pace.
Oh yeah, that was the fastest in that one. That was 162 in a minute, I think, was something like that.
Whatever it was, but I mean,
when you go on an exercise with different regiments, you won't have to walk the centre regiments on march and all that. We had to stay behind about 100 yards or so, and our DLI band would strike up. We'd march off. You catch up there in no time at all, you know, because we're marching so fast.
So would the band meet you on the route marches?
Oh yeah, well, yeah, they must have done. But one time when I was in Spennymoor there, I picked up with this girl, I suppose. And anyway, I should have gone back at midnight, getting before midnight, and I didn't get back till about 5:30. Or 6 o'clock in the morning, and I said hello to the gear one. So I climbed into bed just when the only sergeant would come along shouting, come on, and I just put a blanket over my head like that. And come along, and she put a blanket off you. Well, I said, okay, sergeant. Well. And of course, I had a rough night, and I had to get undressed to put my PT kit on and go running about in all the cold weather and all that. Hey, that's a silly thing to do that. But I just managed to get back. Well, if you had probably fully dressed that day in the morning, that, you know, it'd have been real trouble. But, you know.
Now, so you're in the camp. How often would they let you? You know, you said that night you'd been able to get out.
Well, I had to run back from Spennymoor to Bransworth. That must have been about 4 or 5 miles or something.
But would they? What was the routine from the army's point of view? Were you able to get out of the camp every night, or did you have to have a pass, or how would that work? What was the
well, yeah, Yeah, you had to have a pass, I think, yeah, you had to have a pass, yeah. And you had to be smart enough to get past and to get out.
And so, would it sometimes happen that you wouldn't be smart enough that they would, how would that
they
work?
They would turf you back again.
So where would that happen? What would happen?
Well, you get turfed back again, you get pushed up north, but then you got so discouraged if they wouldn't, you know for a fact that it came up. And of course, every so often, when they wanted somebody to do fatigue and things like that, they'd pick on you for the slightest thing. Because they knew they had to get somebody to work in the kitchen, clean all the pots and pans. So no matter how small what you did, they'd find a fault with you. So you had to get. You got a bit of sacking, hessian, like sandbag hessian, and a bit of sand, and you had to clean these tins and all that with sand and water. The size of it, you could also see very fierce in them, he says, and all that. And it was only fusing cold water with sand and all that, trying to clean the tents and that, and rinsing and that.
What were the kind of, I mean, obviously, at this stage, you had your boots, you had your uniform, all the rest of it. Was it easy to keep it presentable, to keep it smart, or was it hard work?
You had what they called denims, that was like a working gear, you see, and you kept your button dress the larger, the best you possibly could, and that, you know. And you should keep that, but when you went on anything really desperate, you would wear your denims and things like that, you know, because quite often you had to jump in the water and things like that, you know.
What were the things that the NCOs would pick up on when they wanted to kind of find a fault with your turnout? What were the things that?
Well, we had a sergeant major called, we used to call him Spike. His name was Ethington or something like that. And
later on in Brett.
Yeah. You couldn't.
16th Battalion.
You couldn't grow a moustache. You had to have one. If you had a moustache, that was okay, but you couldn't grow one. So the thing at that time was Errol Flynn and Robert Taylor with a moustache and things like that. So I was trying to grow a moustache without him knowing. And he said, let the whiskers grow here. And you get your comb or a pencil and do that. So, okay, you've got your moustache to the groove. Well, this day I got this and I went, just do my moustache and they got. Well, I didn't realise I'd using what they call an indelible pencil. That's sort of them blue ones. And of course, it was like a misty morning and all that, and your nose was running on, and it goes like this. And of course, it got blue all over my face and all that, you know. He said, what the hell's that? I said, that's my moustache. Get off this bloody parade ground. He said, maybe run away and all that, you know. Because he was also saying he'd grown one, and we had to have one.
Why was that just him, or was that like an army rule?
I think it was just him. Mm.
Yeah. And this is Etherington that was in your company. This is moving in the 16th Battalion. Going back to Brandsforth.
The sergeant major there called Tomkinson, I think it was. He wasn't too bad.
Could it have been Thomason?
No, not the RSM.
Not that one.
He was a nasty sort of.
Yeah, we'll get to him as we go. So you were doing your route marches. You were able to get out to Willingdon every now and again.
Under gas training as well.
Could you describe that?
Yes. What you used to do is put your gas mask on, ring about and all that sort of thing. You know? And of course, then you went in this chamber with a dropped gas, you see. And of course, what your smart ass like, you see, hold your breath and all that, you know. So you wouldn't have to breathe the gas in. And when you had the end, you make double up and down and brush, you know, in this chamber. And you say, no, take your gas mask off. You take your gas mask off and you have to hold your breath on. So you're drinking more gas than what you should do, you know. It makes your eyes water and your coughing and all that sort of thing, you know. And then you put your gas mask on again, then you come out and do the roundabout and all that. But some blokes, if I used to clean their gas mask properly, they used to get blanco on the eye part. So when you've been in there sweating and the guy would march up and down in the gas, you come out, you run out, you cross, crash into a tree, not this out and that sort of thing. All the blokes use a vomit and say gas mask, you know.
Did they have you doing marches and so on in the gas mask?